Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Now, my next guest today is a comedian, an actor, a writer, and I suppose what used to be called a television personality. You'll know him from TV shows like Fresh Meat, A League of Their Own, and his really sweet and funny show Travels with My Father. He's also made the leap to Hollywood now with films like Disney's Jungle Cruise. Jack Whitehall, you're very welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks very much for having me on.
Now, Jack, your new stand-up show, which you'll be bringing to Dublin and Belfast, is called Settle Down. Is it literally about settling down?
Yeah, it's sort of a bit of a reflection of where I'm at in my life and what's happened since I toured last 4 years ago. I've met my partner and we've settled down, got a house together, a dog, and now have a baby on the way as well. So, yeah, it's sort of a reflection of that and about how my somewhat reluctant attempts to start adulting properly have manifested themselves.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit defeatist, doesn't it? It's like, I've had my fun, it's time to settle down now, get down to the grim, serious business.
Yeah, I mean, right now, I feel like I'm really in the trenches of that. The baby's imminent, due in September, and I have a little break now in the tour where I'm at home and I'm in inverted commas, nesting, doing lots of chores around the house. And I've been on the road for so long, I feel like now I'm under the sort of lock and key under my girlfriend's watchful gaze. Yesterday, the most exciting thing that happened is I color coordinated a sock drawer. I'm like, maybe that's my life now.
Yeah, there is a slight comfort, I'd imagine, in doing those kind of mundane things if you've been off on the road for ages, but it probably does
get strangely satisfying.
Yes.
Strangely satisfying. Who needs the drink and the drugs and the rock and roll when you've like correctly and satisfyingly organized a sock drawer from lights to darks? It's a really good feeling. There's some serotonin for sure that gets released.
Yeah, for a limited period of time, I'd say.
Yeah.
Do you really feel you're ready to settle down? Now, I don't know you personally, but your image doesn't really scream settling down.
No, I mean, to be fair, the show is a lot about how I struggle to sort of square that up with my personality. And, you know, there's still a fair amount of routines about sort of drunken hijinks and idiotic encounters and, you know, but all sort of through the lens of feeling like this is maybe, you know, the last show where I can get away with that type of material before I kind of, you know, teeter into being fully fledged kind of middle-aged man. Like this is my last show, sort of like a young tearaway. And so, yeah, I think there's enough of that kind of connective tissue to the old kind of me and shows that people have seen before.
Yeah, you got a good 10 years out of the young tearaway anyway, didn't you? So maybe it is time to...
Yeah, I started pretty young and had a pretty good time, so yeah.
Segue on to the next period. So baby on the way in September, you excited about that?
Yeah, really excited. You know, it's quite daunting and it's all becoming very real at the moment. You know, it's crazy. It's this huge thing that happens in your life and there's no trial period or returns policy. There's very little advice you can get from other parents. My mum and dad, I certainly wouldn't like listen to a word that they have to say. So yeah, it's like coming down the tracks very quickly right now.
Yeah, you'll work it out. Lesser people than you have worked it out, so you will figure it out. You probably think the baby is going to change you and change everything, don't you?
Yeah, and overnight, I'm really counting on that. But like, the baby's going to arrive and then I'm immediately going to like smarten up my act and suddenly become this like, you know, best dad in the world. But I think time will tell.
Yeah, yeah. You're kind of a workaholic, aren't you?
Yeah, no, I do certainly like keep my plate pretty full and like to be working all of the time. And it's been a big old slog of a tour. You know, I think we did sort of 70 or 80 dates and then, you know, finished up the first leg of it at the O2 where I did three nights in July. And then, yeah, I've had a little bit of a break now, which is great. It's so good to sort of have that like moment to just breathe a little bit, and then I'll be reinvigorated by the time the autumn comes around, and you know, really looking forward to doing the Dublin shows. That will be my first trip after having had the baby, so I imagine I'll be desperate to leave the house by that point.
Absolutely,
for the prospect of a little weekend in Dublin and Belfast.
Yeah. So where does that drive to? Like, you probably don't need to be doing 70, 80 dates on a stand-up tour and then back out in the road just after you have a baby. Is there an anxiety there, that kind of freelance showbiz anxiety that I need to do the work while it's going?
Yeah, a little bit. Definitely you want to make hay while the sun shines. And but also the reality is I enjoy it. And if I'm sat around idle, I do get a bit twitchy and want to be working and creating. And you know, I'm fortunate enough that I'm able to write as well and have a production company, so you know, produce the odd thing. But even when I'm doing that, you know, I think the performer part of me gets very frustrated. So if I'm, you know, see a period of time where I'm not acting or I'm in between jobs, it's very easy to go up at a couple of comedy clubs, and the, you know, the way it always works is you end up building a like 10-minute set, 20-minute set, and then before you know it, you've got an hour, and then you want to get on the road and do tour dates and Netflix specials and whatnot. So yeah, I think I don't know whether I'll always be like that. I think maybe when I get a little bit older, I might enjoy a little bit of peace and quiet. And maybe with the kids arriving, that might change my headspace a bit. But at the moment, I just really enjoy working and really enjoy being out on the road and touring and doing stand-up.
Listen, you don't want my advice about babies, and I'm sure you're getting loads of advice. But you know, if you think that, oh, having the baby will cure me of the workaholism and I'll get work-life balance then, there is a chance it gets worse then, because you get this anxiety of, I have to provide for this baby. I have to provide for this baby. I need to go out and work. I need to go out and work.
Yeah, yeah. No, I feel like that's definitely a potential sort of issue on the horizon. And, you know, I am trying to be as conscious of it as I can as well. So trying to make sure that I like prioritize that time and I'm a little bit smarter sort of with my scheduling of things. And that is definitely why I was like, oh, I need to want to do as many dates as possible before September comes. And so I have maybe been doing a slightly insane routing of this tour and doing sort of extra shows and extra nights here and there, and just trying to cram as much in before September as possible. And then, you know, beyond that, maybe try and have a slightly more civilized touring schedule.
The other thing you're probably going to have to do is learn how to drive, because you might not be aware of this, but there is a kind of a ritual for men whereby when the baby is born, you have to get a car seat. Possibly involving getting rid of your fun car and getting a car that can take an ISOFIX car seat in the back, and you have to drive the baby home. Are you going to learn to drive for the event?
Well, yeah, the best laid plans. I would love to say that I'm going to be able to learn to drive by that point, but I fear we're going to be getting into an Uber on that day. And we've got the car seat. The car seat's upstairs. She's bought the car seat. It's in the hallway. Waiting to be unpacked. I was like, we don't even have a car. So the car with no seat, which is slightly depressing. And it stares at me every time I walk into the house. It's there on the floor looking back at me going, come on. And I think now's the time to learn to drive finally. But yeah, thus far not. I was really relying on tech having caught up, like the advancements AI and, you know, all these things that we can do, harvesting water from Mars and sending, you know, satellites into space, but we still haven't worked out like driverless cars for the masses. I'm like, when is that going to happen? I was really, I was really banking on that when I flunked my tests and, you know, stop my attempts to learn to drive.
Yeah, but because no, it would be a shame to learn how to drive now if it's just around the corner. Imagine if you learned to drive and then suddenly it arrived. Know. Yeah. Okay, so maybe hedge your bets for another while.
Yeah, exactly.
Is your father, Michael, excited about the baby? Because he has been nagging you about procreating for a while now, hasn't he?
He has, and he's excited. I mean, he doesn't show it necessarily because he has that resting bitch face, but my mum was over the moon. Anyone would have thought that she was having the child. My dad has been a little bit more reserved, but I can tell beneath the icy cold veneer that he is quite excited. And yeah, he's very sweet with my niece. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing him with my baby come September. It really brings out the soft side of him.
Yeah, and you can see it with Winston the doll as well. He does have a, he lavishes love on Winston the doll that he never lavishes on you, doesn't he?
Indeed, yeah, the doll. Oh God.
Can you explain Winston?
I had a conversation about whether I'd like any of Winston's clothes for the baby. I was like, absolutely not. No, thank you. I was like, you're so weird. I had a photograph the other day that my mom insisted on taking and putting up on her social media, which was me and my sister and her daughter and then my girlfriend and the bump and then me holding Winston as well. Like, we were all one big happy family. So, yeah, those two are lunatics.
Your dad was, he was 50, wasn't he, when you were born? So automatically I'm thinking that kind of older, distant father, like that, you know, you never really connect with. But obviously wasn't like that.
No, I mean, I think it helped that as I got a little bit older, he sort of wound up work. So he was a lot more present. And even though he was older and, you know, not necessarily like kicking a football around with me in the garden, it did mean, God forbid, it did mean that he wasn't, you know, going to the office all the time and he wasn't working as much and he was able to, you know, spend holidays with us and lots of time, you know, when we were growing up, we got to see him and he wasn't as obsessed with his work by that point. And that's definitely, I think, the advantage of having the slightly older father. I always assumed that I would, like, because of his sort of example, I thought I would be, you know, it would happen to me later in life and I might be a kind of, you know, Al Pacino figure, just having one at 83. but you can't really like plan the trajectory of your life really. And I wasn't expecting to meet Roxy. I wasn't expecting to be ready to have a kid at 35. And it sort of all come about much quicker than I thought, but I'm excited that, I whilst I will still be working a lot, that maybe I'll be able to be a little bit more active and go and do some, you know, crazy adventures with my kid and be the embarrassing, cool younger dad.
Yeah. Your parents carted you off to boarding school at 8, didn't they? Which could slightly feel like a rejection by your parents, if you don't mind me saying. It's fairly extreme, isn't it?
Well, it was a little bit older than I always say 8, and then they remind me that actually it was 11, which is a little bit older.
Okay, okay, yeah, yeah. You're ready for the world by 11. You're ready to go out there.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was certainly quite daunted by the prospect of it, but I was really struggling in the school that I was at and academically was bottom of the class, was bullied, really didn't enjoy it. And so this school that they sent me to was incredible in this sort of strange, eccentric, like melting pot of really interesting individuals and had some great teachers that, I still see and come to my shows to this day. And I was only down the road. So I definitely like play up how traumatic it was just because I know that it really winds him up. But the reality is it was kind of, I had an okay experience at the school that they sent me to. But I'm not going to ever let them know that because it's just too much fun to sort of call them out on having just banished me aged 8.
And you've alluded to your dad at giving you advice and stuff. So he was in the kind of business end of showbiz, wasn't he? And your mother was an actress. Did they encourage you in your show business endeavors when you were young?
No. They were desperate that I do anything other than go into kind of acting. They thought it was a very competitive landscape and a really hard industry to sort of make a living in, and they wanted me to go and do something more reliable. And my dad was always like, I wanted you to be a lawyer or a banker or something. So always pressing on me to get a proper education and wanted me to go to university and all of these things. But I, you know, the minute I'd started performing on stage and doing sketches and, a little bit of stand-up, I was kind of bitten by the bug and knew that that was going to be what I wanted to do for the rest of my life, come what may. So yeah, there was a little bit of push and pull with me trying to navigate a route into the arts and then my dad in particular desperately wanting me to have a proper office job.
And is he proud of you now?
Yeah, I think so. I think he is on the whole. I mean, every now and again, I probably still have the capacity to let him down. And I think deep down, he's happy that I'm in, you know, comedy and acting industry, and an industry that he knows and loves, and that I'm not, you know, putting on a suit and going to Canary Wharf every day. I don't think we would be able to have as much of a connection were I to do a job like that. So, yeah, I think it all worked out for the best in the end.
And it worked out for him as well, in that he's become this unlikely celebrity in his late 70s, early 80s. He's enjoying that, I think, is he?
Yeah, a Nepo dad. He clung onto my coattails for long enough, and now he seems to have a career of his own volition. He's off doing podcasts and reality television shows, and the man never seems to stop working. So, yeah, it's quite bizarre, like waking up as I did a couple of days ago and turning on the television, and him and my mum are on Saturday Kitchen having a natter about doing live shows as well, which they hadn't even told me that they're off, like, I think touring their podcast now. And I'm like, oh my God, what have I unleashed upon the world? I'm totally responsible for this.
So he's got the bug now as well. And it's funny, going back to the comedy. So despite all the other work you do, and you talk about the production, the acting, all that kind of stuff, you do keep coming back to the relative kind of masochism of stand-up comedy and the live thing. It obviously gives you a buzz, that the live thing gives you a buzz nothing else does it?
100%. It's very hard to quit, because, yeah, nothing is able to replace it. And doing TV shows and films and whatnot, you know, is great and a really, you know, fun experience. And like the element of camaraderie and being part of a bigger cast or crew is something that I really enjoy, but it's quite a slow and arduous process at times. And you're kind of, you know, beholden to the wills of editors and directors and producers and whatnot. And, you know, it's just all takes a lot longer. And there's something really freeing about the immediacy of stand up and being able to get up on stage and say whatever you want, like being completely unshackled and there being no kind of filter or edit. And, you know, you can talk about whatever you want. And then that buzz of it just being like, you know, that instant reaction from an audience. And that is a real thrill, and it is a bit of an addiction that you can't really escape. Because I don't know, I did a tour 4 years ago and I thought I'd knock it on the head. I thought I can't see myself wanting to do stand-up again. I was so bored of the sound of my own voice.
Yeah.
And been like doing this material for nearly a year. And so then took a long time off. But before I knew it, I was like itching to get back up on stage and get into the comedy clubs and then theatres and start doing material again. It's something that, yeah, I think I always find myself navigating back towards.
I've seen you say that this show, Settling Down, is your most personal show yet. And I mean, I was watching again your last show, which was quite personal about your love life and stuff like that. But you were actually talking about a girlfriend who is now gone. Is it different with you're now using your life and your partner Roxy's life, and she's still there, obviously, in your life? How does she feel about you, you know, using everything for comedy?
For now, she's still there.
Okay.
And she'll be heading to the door. No, I've got a trap now. I've put a baby in her, so she can't. Yeah, it is. It's a slightly different kettle of fish now that I'm living with the person that I'm talking about extensively on stage. But yeah, I think she's been great. It's the first time she's ever experienced what it's like to go out with a comedian, and going up and talking about intimate details of our lives. And she's she's fine with most of the material about her. She got a little bit annoyed about some of the material about our dog. She was like, you take our dog's name out of your mouth. Like, you say whatever you like about me, but don't you, you know, abuse that angel that was sent to us on stage in front of those drunken morons. And I was like, I'm sorry, but, you know, fair game. So the dog, it was the one thing that she really took objection
to. Okay.
Hard. We watched that documentary about Ed Sheeran, and the whole first episode is about how much he loves his wife and how he wrote this song perfect about her.
Yeah.
And I was watching it with Roxy. I made the fatal error of watching it with her. She was like, I want to go out with Ed Sheeran. You go out with Ed Sheeran, he writes a song about you called Perfect. You go out with a comedian, he just goes and tells a load of indiscreet stories about your sex life in front of strangers every night.
Listen, as long as she doesn't get protective about the baby the way she is about the dog, because let's face it, there's going to be a lot of material in that baby. Yeah.
That poor child. There's going to be whole shows written about it.
Jack, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. And Settle Down is coming to the SSE Arena in Belfast on October 6th and Dublin's 3 Arena on October 7th. And tickets are on sale now. Jack Whitehall, thank you so much.
Thanks very much for having me on.
Email brendan@rte.ie.